On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we'll be recording from the annual Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies Retreat on Loon Lake in the beautiful Adirondack Mountains. We debrief the ASC 2019 conference and celebrate National Timeout Day.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys.
Welcome to episode 57 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for June 10th, 2019, recording from the Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies annual corporate retreat on Loon Lake in Chestertown, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the leading experts in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry, and the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including the Survey Guide for ASCs. John also speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics. Also joining us for this episode are Alex Borneman, Director of Operations for AHS, Judy D'Ambrosio, Director of Education for AHS, and Zach Kalaritis, Senior Consultant for AHS.
This is exciting. Welcome, everybody. You're all around the table here. We've got five mics going live, which we've never done before. And we're in this incredible setting in near Loon Lake. We're actually not on Loon Lake.
But very close.
Yeah.
It is beautiful.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you here. So this is something, you know, we say we do this every year, but this is only the second year we've done it. Mm-hmm. And last year we were up in the Poconos. This year we decided to locate closer to the New York State Association meeting, which was last week, or ended on Friday. Mm-hmm. We're recording on a Sunday. I know, guys. Sorry.
The weekend was supposed to be work-free, but this was kind of fun, though. Yeah. We're going to enjoy it. And we had a beautiful, beautiful hike the other day. We were quite proud of ourselves.
Where did we go? What was the name of that place?
Natural Stone Bridges and Caves.
Yes.
I mean, what's like written right on the front of his t-shirt, we could have just read.
Let us look at
National Stone Bridges and Caves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please, you're ruining my reputation, right? I, of course, do not wear t-shirts.
Oh, no, of course not.
Yeah.
So, nice. So this is what we do with our, we treat our employees very well, just like everybody hopefully does with their employees at surgery centers. And what we do in the beginning is on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we invite the spouses and better halves of our organization to join us for a couple days. So unfortunately, Judy, your husband was not able to make it, unfortunately, due to some family problems. But Zach and Alex, your girlfriends were up here with us for the weekend.
And my daughter, because my spouse is already here, right. So I handed her. And she had a wonderful time, her first time without her two young boys. So
it she lost like 40 pounds in one day.
Nobody hanging on her.
Nobody hanging on.
But yeah.
She had a lot of fun. So did the girls have fun with the girlfriend?
Yeah, from what I hear, they loved it.
Definitely. Good time.
Yeah,
I think we would do it again.
We went horseback riding, which was pretty fun. That was awesome.
I heard some stories about these horses, though.
Yeah. My horse was named Chief, and I found out why, because he wanted to be in the front.
Right.
And kept sticking his nose where it didn't belong. And the horse in front of me, Rachel's horse, my girlfriend's horse, actually kicked him a couple times. I guess he got a little too close.
Yeah, he needed to learn personal space.
And a couple of them charged through the brush, right, with either Jenna or...
Jenna. The two in front of me. Yeah, Jenna's horse was the slowest, and...
It stopped at every tree to have a snack.
And, of course, Jenna's not here to defend herself, so she'll be arriving in another half hour. Maybe she'll be here before we finish recording, but the poor thing. Jenna tends to be a little bit, shall we say, on the klutzy side. So
it was her horse. It was not Jenna. It was her horse. She was just there for the ride.
It was fun to watch, though.
Yeah. And, Zach, your girlfriend came the longest distance.
Yeah, she came all the way from Atlanta. She just moved down there recently, started a new job.
Yeah.
She came up to be here with us for the weekend. She had a good time.
You know, I always thought that your girlfriend was quiet.
No.
She completely dispelled it this weekend. Yeah. We had a lot of fun, though. I mean, everybody really got along well, and it's the first time that all of us have been together. And, Zach, this is kind of funny. You actually just graduated officially.
Yeah.
Though you've been out of school for over 6 months now. But so you were not at the ASCA conference, unfortunately.
Not, yeah.
But you were able to make the New York State Association conference. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. So, let's just talk a little bit about what we're expecting of the annual retreat here. I think retreats are very important for organizations. I'm very big into strategic planning, of course. And we started this retreat last year as an annual retreat where we really get away from it. And then we also kind of do in the around Christmas time or just before Christmas another retreat, which is like we retreat to the basement instead of...
Lock the door.
Keep the dogs out, which is never possible. So, Alex, tell us a little bit about what's ahead of us for the retreat this weekend.
Yeah, so when we plan these, we like to reach out to our employees and see what they'd like to learn, where their gaps in knowledge are, and how they think they can improve. And then the management, I guess you can say, has some
input. That would be me.
We do a lot of education. That's what's upcoming. But we also tend to try to plan things to have a little fun.
Yeah.
So that's been this weekend. And we also plan to have what we call family dinners and family breakfasts. Right. Because, here at AHS, we're all family.
That's right.
Whether we actually... our blood or not, right. Many of us are.
So talking about the fun things we do, we like doing board games, for example, and especially cooperative ones. But we did not have a cooperative one last night, clearly, Zach, right?
That's right.
So we taught Zach's girlfriend how to play Catan, Settlers of Catan.
Yep.
And she showed no mercy to you. She really wiped you out completely. Yeah. And, for that matter, all of us.
Strong competitive spirit, for sure.
With an assist from my girlfriend who wiped me out.
That's true. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The
formidable team.
Yeah, that definitely was an interesting evening. So why did you have to rush her back to the airport so quickly?
Well, funny story.
Anyway, we all had a lot of fun last night. We really haven't gotten any of the cooperative games on the table yet, but we'll be doing that sometime next couple days. So actually, we have some interesting news, or very major developments, actually, on the podcast and also with regard to Eden Group Development and some of its books. So first of all, I want to announce that Alex and I have written a new book, The Survey Checklist for ASCs, a tool for the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers. We never make these titles short, don't we?
We love long.
Wasn't it? Snappy little title.
So this book will be available shortly through our website and at ASCpodcast.com and on Amazon and all major online booksellers. It's not available quite well. I don't know when this episode will drop, but it'll be available soon. It's a very exciting. It's meant as a companion guide to the ASC, or to the survey guide for ASCs. So, Alex, talk a little bit about what you did with this book here, because you did most of the writing here. I just kind of put the little flourishes on it.
Yeah, so we developed it as a tool to help surgery center staff perform mock surveys, basically, on themselves. Right. It was a part of our effort to help ASCs be always prepared.
Kind of our theme.
For surveys. Yep, exactly. And the way it works is we took the CMS conditions for coverage.
And interpretive guidelines.
And interpretive guidelines. And basically reworked them so that they're not only easy to understand, but also in a format where we could mark compliance down and have basically a to-do list for our surgery centers. So we're hoping that it'll help them really make these regulations and interpretive guidelines a lot more easy to understand and easier to handle.
Right. And, you know, what we found is that, you know, organizations that have accreditation by the Joint Commission or from HHHC have the standards, which HHHC at least is kind of a checklist. Joint Commission's really not. But this is meant to be for everybody, you know, right. All surgery centers that are, you know, going through a CMS survey, either through the state or through the deemed organization. And I think it's a great tool, great work that you did on it, Alex. Definitely something everybody will like. And we'll probably be using it also internally with our company. That's mm-hmm. basically what we do when we go out and do a thing. So I guess, we originally wanted this book to be spiral bound. And we might publish an edition spiral bound, but it turns out that if you want to publish it on Amazon, you can't do spiral bound. So if you want a spiral bound version, you'll probably have to wait a couple weeks until we get it up on our website. So, but all that is coming very soon to a online bookstore near you. And the second thing is that's very exciting too is that we have developed a new membership program for the ASC podcast with John Gailey. We've talked about this a little bit over the last year and a half, and we finally did it. So now you can go to the ASCpodcast.com website and follow the links to become a member of the ASC podcast with John Gailey. So the podcast costs us money, obviously, to do, and we do have sponsorship, obviously, by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. But there is a lot that needs to be done, you know, the cost of all this wonderful equipment standing in front of all of you here, which there's an awful lot of metal here, let's put it this way. If, you know, we were inside of one of those
MRI
machines, right? We'd be in a lot of trouble.
Way to describe it.
Yeah, well.
Isn't it nice you drew a blank and all of it?
No.
Miss MRI over here, you know. So you go to the ASCpodcast.com website, you sign up to become a member, and you have access to special content, different content on the website, and the ability to participate in a special forum only for members. Which allows you to talk to each other about the podcast and with the staff of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. And also, members will have the ability to get one AEU for each 3 months of membership. So that's a total of 4 AEUs if you're CAS certified. And it will also be offering some IPCU credits in the near future once we get our infection control section up and running. So to become a member of the podcast, go to our website and follow the links. And we're very excited to start doing this. We'll see how that goes and see if we can help defray some of the costs of travel and all the other things that we have to do here to be able to keep this podcast going. And again, thank you to everybody that supports the ASC podcast. We really, we've gone to 3 conferences within the last 4 weeks, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And it's always wonderful to see all of our devoted listeners out there. And one story was particularly ego-boosting. We had one person stop me after a presentation, and she turned to me and she said, your podcast has really helped us to get through the CMS survey. Apparently, they didn't have such a good experience with their consultants. And they really feel that without the help of the podcast, they would have not done very well on the survey. So that's the type of thing that keeps all of us going here. And as I'm looking around the table here, I got to appreciate, you know, all of you. I mean, Sue and I, of course, do the podcast, but in order for us to do this, you guys have to give us time and stories. You're very good about giving us stories that we can talk about. So, you know, thank you for your support and thank you for being here tonight to do this. So the cost of being a member of the ASC podcast with John Gailey is $10 per month or $30 per quarter. So go to the ASCpodcast.com website and follow the links to become a member. So Sue, this is an interesting week. We have a special day coming up, don't we?
We do. National Timeout Day is June 12th.
So we better get this episode uploaded before June 12th.
I know.
But every day should be Timeout Day, mm-hmm. right? That was a good segue. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what National Timeout Day is. So National Timeout Day is actually sponsored by the Association of Operating Room Nurses, better known as AORN. And their motto for this week is Safe Surgery Together for Every Patient, Every Time.
So the purpose of this is to raise awareness and to get people to really recommit to timeout. So June 12th, 2019 is a day for every perioperative team member as patient advocates to recommit to always stop and perform a timeout before every surgery. Start with taking time to acknowledge and thank all the perioperative professionals who together as a team ensure that this essential component of patient safety takes place.
So what we ask is every perioperative team member to speak up and reaffirm their commitment to a culture of safety and to take the actions necessary to prevent wrong site, wrong procedure, and wrong patient surgeries. So ARN's encouraging everyone to share their team's commitment and to win a photo contest, which means taking a photo of your team commemorating timeout and share it on Facebook or Instagram using ARN Timeout 2009, and your team could win. Be creative and have fun. So let's talk a little bit about timeouts, everybody.
I want to take a picture and like go with Tammy. We're a team.
Please don't take a picture with your patients.
Yes, that's right. Smile.
All with the patient.
But that the patient should definitely be involved in your timeout.
That's right. That's right.
They should, if you know, if they're able to, and they should be able to.
So you know, one of our centers, we're in the process of doing a number of plans of corrections for three surveys, and unbelievably, we have one center that had a timeout where several of the doctors did not, shall we say, participate directly.
That doesn't ever happen.
I know.
Yeah, I'm so surprised to hear that.
And in this case, they didn't have their, you know, they weren't looking at the person calling the timeout. They had their backs to them, and they got cited for it, rightfully so, of course.
Yeah. I think it's easy for it to become so routine, but it's when you let your guard down and you just think, oh, you know, I know this, that you're going to miss something and you just don't ever want to take that chance. So
as a surveyor, there's actually seven things that I look for as part of a timeout. The right patient, the right procedure, the right laterality, if that's applicable, the right implant, if that's applicable, any patient's issues such as allergies, etc., the availability of supplies and equipment and the readiness, and lastly, any unknown individuals in the room. So a couple of those items probably are surprising to people. So what do you think of equipment and supplies? Anybody?
Well, I've seen this cited before at one of our centers. I think it was probably a year ago, and I was surprised about it then. And being non-clinical, I don't know if I completely understand it still.
I think because you don't want to have to leave the room, basically, is the reasoning for it. You want to make sure everything's there. You don't want to have to stop things, open the doors to let might affect the sterility and all that kind of thing, right?
Right. And this has happened a couple times where, you know, people are in the procedure and they suddenly realize that there's a piece of equipment that they needed but they didn't have, and that stops the procedure. It extends the amount of anesthesia time that the patient has, and it increases the possibility of an error. Likewise with supplies, you really should make sure that all your supplies are there. Again, as Sue said, to minimize the number of times you have to leave the room to grab something, especially for those supplies you absolutely know that you're going to need.
Would be the best way to go about checking the supplies for the procedure? Would it be going through each stage of the procedure and thinking about, okay, which supplies we'll need for each part, or having a pre-checklist?
Sue, they can use their physician preference cards. Can they not? Like a physician's preference card will say what equipment he needs to have in there for each, he likes this brand of this supply. And they have to know that. They have to be aware of who's coming in, what kind of patient they're doing, and then go through that checklist or go through that preference card to make sure that they have everything that this doctor is going to ask for.
Yeah, because they generally would be pretty standard with a lot of the procedures. So if they're pretty well-versed in that, just as a backup running through and saying, you know, do we have this that we generally use, I would think.
And then same thing with equipment. Not only do we want to make sure that the equipment is there, but that it is functioning properly. And that's one of those problems that tends to crop up every once in a while where you're not going to have the CRM in position. I remember one time I was doing a mock survey in one of our centers. They didn't realize that they needed the ultrasound machine for one of the pain procedures, and they did not have it available and had to stop, just like we talked about, and, you know, get somebody to go out and get the equipment and bring it in. And those are the types of things that we try to avoid in this. How about the last one? Any unknown individuals in the room?
I think that should be on everybody's list. I mean, I know we're kind of making fun of you. This is the John Gailey list.
Yeah.
But that really should be on everybody's list.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we understand that it's necessary. Sometimes they have a representative or a manufacturer's rep in there. I get it. But from a patient point of view, if he's in scrubs, they certainly don't know the difference between the surgical provider and whoever this is. And they really do have the need to know that. In fact, their consent should mention that I'm okay with the fact that there's somebody basically not clinical in there with
you. Right. Yeah. And know where they stay. You know, if you have a fellow in the room, that fellow might have privileges to do procedures or might not be. Mm-hmm. You know, who's scrubbed in, who's not. And, you know, of course, if a surveyor's in or other visitors are in, everybody needs to know, you know, what their role is in that room. Mm-hmm. Now, I would only probably do this if there is somebody in the room that's not known to the team. Also, it's a good time to mention that anytime you have a change in staff members in the room, you should do another timeout.
If one person has to switch out.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And we recently, I think I did a chart review where there was quite a bit of confusion as to what happened in the middle of the procedure when there was relief. The circulating nurse changed, one person left and another one came in here, and there was no dual signatures. There was no signatures for the two nurses in there, so there was no clear cut. So not only was a new timeout not done, but the documentation didn't show the change in that. And that could get you into an awful lot of trouble, especially if you ever had a lawsuit in that case. So, you know, take those changeovers. You know, I don't think we find it that often in the outpatient setting because most of the time people are, you know, these procedures are relatively short. So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to move out staff. But remember, even in an ASC setting, that's possible. So it goes without saying, what do we do during a timeout? What does the word mean? We stop. Everyone stops. Everyone listens. Everyone reacts. In other words, they say that they agree with that information. And you got to take it seriously.
And you have to face, because we're not just listening while you're not turning around and doing it. Right. You have to turn, face, really show that you're paying attention.
That's right. And stop all other activity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand if the patient, you know, something's going on that you need to handle, but then you stop the timeout until that is taken care of. And you make sure that all of those elements are met. So National Timeout Day this coming Wednesday, June 12th, is an important date for us to try to, you know, celebrate the importance of timeouts and to practice it even better than you normally do. Mm-hmm. And we do want to thank the Association for Operating Room Nurses for celebrating this week. This is their idea, and the information we provided at the beginning are from their website. And encourage everyone, all ambulatory surgery centers, to work with the ARN and to encourage their nurses to become members of ARN. So go to aorn.org to become a member and encourage your nurses to participate with their local chapter of ARN also. Let's take a short break and we'll come back and we'll talk about ASCA 2019 and our final observations. In the segment that follows, we incorrectly identified ARN standards that recommended keeping the endoscope buttons together. The standards are actually from SGNA. We were unable to edit out the inaccurate statement and apologize for any confusion. So the last time we got together to talk about ASCA 2019 was Thursday night of the event. Remember that evening, guys?
Yeah, we were all exhausted, sprawled on the beds in Alex's hotel room, trying to sound very awake and very alert and intelligent.
And we had our microphone precariously positioned on the ironing board.
Yeah. Remember that? I'd forgotten about that.
So we have new equipment to take care of that particular problem after that event. I purchased a whole bunch of new things. But we actually have a studio here, by the way, in this place in we're staying on Loon Lake, so... A little noisy because of the road noise, but certainly a lot better than that hotel room that evening. So when we talked then, we had only gone through really the first full day of the conference and the pre-conference. But there are a number of things that happened after that on Friday and Saturday. So I'm just going to go around the table here. And unfortunately, Zach, we're going to have to skip you because you weren't there.
I wasn't there. No problem.
Zach was too busy getting graduated.
That's right.
Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about the sessions you went to on Thursday and Friday? I'm sorry, on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll actually go with Saturday because those are the ones I remember. So there was an NFPA 99 risk assessment one, which if you don't know, the NFPA 99 risk assessment speech was by Bill Lindemann. And that's a very important risk assessment that needs to be done. And we did speak to that a little bit earlier. The other speech on that day, on Saturday, was about active shooter.
Which I moderated. Did you remember that?
I do remember that, yes.
Because I did such a great job.
And I had a number of takeaways from that. The presentation was done by Lee Eves, who is a security and risk consultant and a former Secret Service member.
And probably most interesting, too, his wife was an ASC administrator, which really gave him a unique perspective.
Absolutely. And he said a number of things that kind of surprised me. And as somebody that does a number of disaster drills and active shooter drills, I found it very rewarding and educational. One of the big items that he was talking about was pre-event mitigation and the fact that there are signs prior to an attack that we can address. A lot of these items come from domestic violence issues or even before violence is involved, just a stressful situation in somebody's life, whether that be a staff member, family member, or a patient. And it involves a number of signs like, you know, scoping out the place, being obsessed with one issue, whether that be an internal problem at the center or, you know, an external problem that they're having in their life. And what can happen is that they escalate to a point where we have to react to an active shooter. So we want to stop it before it even gets to that point. And a big part of that is having a culture of openness and safety where people feel good about coming forward to, you know, management and other staff members and telling them about the issues in their life. And so we can kind of lower that stress for them.
He made a big point about that is that even if you don't think it's anything serious, don't ever dismiss what somebody tells you. You know, just let them know, I'll look into it. If you're uncomfortable about this other coworker or something like that, don't ever not take it seriously, because then the next time maybe it is serious and they don't want to come to you.
Right.
I think what was fascinating to me is he was very adamant that these are not random situations, that there are always somebody who has an agenda, somebody that is known to the people in that organization. And that was really frightening, I think, to me, as I'm listening to this.
Though on the other hand, it makes sense, but we don't always think about it. Right. You know?
It makes it sound a little bit more controllable as long as people, as you said, are, you know, upfront and reacting to it, even when the minor signs are noted.
Yeah, or if you notice somebody really unstable at the beginning of employment, and I'm not sure how this works out legally and everything, but he was just saying often if you can let them go or whatever, lay off if it's a temporary situation, because it's usually within that first year that they start showing signs. And once they get past that, they tend to be much more involved and obsessed almost. So at that point, you really have yourself a problem. So,
right, and harder to get out of your organization.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
Judy, what did you take out of Friday and Saturday?
On Saturday, I took out an airplane. So I didn't
go to, that's true. I forgot
didn't
about
go
that.
To any of the sessions on Saturday. But the first session that I went to on Friday morning was a session called The Rules of Informed Consent. And it seemed so, you know, arbitrary and everybody, you know, this will be boring, but I'll do it, you know. And I was really amazed by the speaker's note. The first speaker was Deborah
Stitchcomb.
And she's fabulous. But she brought with her this time a William Miller, and he's a partner in a law firm in San Diego. And they sort of did it together as a tag team. You know, she would explain informed consent and the rules that are necessary from our standards. And then he would come up and put up a slide that was, and they were all labeled the same thing. What the jury hears.
Yeah, that was a great perspective.
And it was a perspective I had not thought of. Because, you know, you follow the standards and this is what it has to say. And there were a lot of, the group, although large, it was a very large group that day. You know, all the seats were taken and there was standing room only. But there was a lot of open conversation about, well, wait, do we have to have separate consent forms? And then there was this, not an argument, but a heated conversation regarding whether to have as general a consent form as possible so that it can just be used one form for every patient in your center. And this attorney, again, William Miller was his name, was very adamant about how the more detailed you are, the safer you are. And reminded me of things that, you know, I haven't really read a consent form for, you know, all the words of a consent form for any of our clients in a long time, but it made me go back and read them to make sure that the exact form of anesthesia used is on there and the exact risks and alternatives to the procedure are on there. And the more detailed that is, the better off you are.
Yeah, you can prove that it was gone over. I mean, you obviously don't just have to have it on the consent. You have to actually discuss it.
And he made this great, he told, well, they were horror stories, really, but this one story that stuck with me was about this particular patient who had a bad outcome, unfortunately, and did try to litigate about how she just was not told that, you know, she her procedure went in one direction and something different had to be done while she was under anesthesia, you know, for her own safety. And she litigated because she said she'd never give consent to that. And the lawyer was really very clear on, we send a copy of your consent form home in your pre-op package, not to be signed, just to be read. And when she got to the jury box, she was like, well, they, you know, I didn't know anything about that. He goes, well, you had the packet 4 days prior to showing up for surgery. So you could have read it and written down any questions. And on the form you did sign, this form over here, it says, I was given the opportunity to ask questions and have those questions explained to me. So you had 3 days to read it. You signed that you answered questions. And I don't mean to say that if a person's, I mean, a bad outcome is a bad outcome. And and that's devastating and I'm sorry.
But have you done everything you could?
Yeah, but has the center done everything they could to make sure that this person knew is unfortunate and unlikely. Really, I mean, it's not that it happens that often.
Yeah.
It's unlikely. But if it does, they really need to be sure that their patient is completely aware of what's going on. So I did. I went back to some of our consent forms to make sure it said I had the opportunity to ask any questions. And there was a place to check and sign for that. And I went back to see which of our centers have a separate consent for different kinds of surgery so that those specific alternatives, those specific risks are discussed in detail. So it made me change my head about how I looked at it. You know, so they were both fabulous. I don't mean to just say that he was great, but they were a really good tag team together. I liked how they got it done.
Yeah. And he did say that it is okay for a patient to cross out some of the information on there if they're choosing that they're not okay with that risk or with that possibility. But on the other side of that, the center can say, you know, then we're not comfortable if this cannot be a possibility.
Yeah, he told this story of the one patient that didn't want a specific kind of, was it a specific kind of anesthesia?
So they crossed it off
on the consent form before they signed it. And then the doctor said, well, you know, this is our standard procedure. This is what we believe is safest.
Yes.
If you're not comfortable with this, we're going to suggest you have the procedure done elsewhere.
Yeah, we're not comfortable with
But that's why you have to have that whole discussion. It isn't just, here, please sign this before we get started. I mean, you really have to talk about what's on there so that everybody's on the same page.
I think there was a book that she had recommended where it had said consent is a process, not a form.
Yep. And that was very also stuck with me. It's a process, not a form.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what session stood out for you?
Well, both of those. And then
we hung out a lot together.
That's right. We were all together for the one on active shooter.
But I also sat in on Melissa Kubach's session on endoscope reprocessing. And that's not a subject I'm really familiar with. I know some of the basics, but some of the points that she made that stuck with me, talking about protective equipment for the people that are reprocessing the endoscopes, because I know we've seen that sometimes where people just
and
are washing them, and I'm like, how do you not know what's going to splash up in your face or anything like that? And she just, you know, stressed the mouth protection, extended length gloves. You don't want your hands in there, and then for the things to go over the top of the gloves.
Protective glasses.
Yep. Shoe and hair coverings. So, you know, you're not tracking in and out. She was talking about loaner instruments, and if you need to do that in your center, don't forget that everybody needs to be trained on that instrument. And also you need the IFU
in your
center.
Use,
yep. And
make sure you document that they were trained. Like you have a document. That says,
document that they were trained. Yep. Before you get into using that.
By the way, before you go on, didn't want to mention that we just had a citation in one of our centers for not following ARN standards with regard to keeping the buttons with the endoscope, remember?
Oh, remember that? And Jenna and I talked about this, about how there's this device, doohickey, that attaches to the that attaches the two buttons, because the buttons are removable. And I didn't, Jenna had to explain that to me. But it keeps them attached to the scope
to make
sure that this scope belongs with these buttons. And because sometimes when you put them in to be cleaned, you're having two scopes at once.
Right.
So you had to have a way to attach them. And Jenna taught me about that. I'm sure it has a name other than doing it.
I know.
But I think
my whole point here is that, and I'm sorry, we'll get back to you in a second, Sue. But what was important is that the surveyor was actually recommending that we not follow the manufacturer's instructions. They didn't do it on purpose. They were recommending that we follow the ARN standard, which the ARN recommendation, which conflicted with the IFU. And we made it very clear in the plan of correction that, you know, we would be following the instructions for use from the manufacturer, simply because that's what ARN tells us to do. So, and a recommendation from ARN is not going to override an instructions for use from the manufacturer. So I'm sorry, I just thought it would be a good thing to interject that.
No, that's okay. I only really had one other thing that I had jotted down that she had noticed sometimes is an issue that the dedicated soak time that you do per the instructions for use, make sure that that time starts after everything is fully saturated, get it in there, get it really soaking, and then, you know, then you can begin timing, and you should always visually inspect everything, you know, as it comes out, you know, with a magnifier and really get a good look at that.
And then probably the session that stood out for me was the one, again, with Bill Lindemann about, you know, the NFPA 99. There were a couple that gave us an opportunity to ask a couple questions of him. And one issue that's come up is whether you need to have a gas-powered or fuel-powered generator in a GI setting. And we were recently told by a surveyor that we would not pass the survey for a brand new surgery center that's being built as a GI center. And this facility will only be doing, you know, moderate sedation in all the cases. And that's what a survey had told us as part of a mock survey. But Bill indicated that that would not be necessary as long as we do a risk assessment that determines that there would be no risk to the patient by not having a gas power generator. So now this organization does have backup power in the form of a UPS. So the system will keep power in the surgery center for at least 90 minutes after a power loss using a UPS system or built-in major UPS system for that whole facility. But that literally saved our client probably six figures there in putting in a new generator. Not to mention it wouldn't have been nearly impossible since this particular center is located in New York City on a multi-story building, which would preclude being able to do that. So that was a good session, same session Alex was talking about there. Overall, what did you think of the conference?
Yeah, I thought it was great. As we talked about on one of our earlier podcasts, you know, the venue was incredible.
Beautiful, yeah.
It was breathtaking. Mm-hmm. And Nashville was great, too.
All the speakers were fantastic, some of which I'd heard before, but a lot of them were new to me. Mm-hmm. And the organization of all of it was just so very well done.
It was. And I think, like you said, sometimes we'd heard the speakers or heard the subject, but you always find something new that you can learn. And just everybody getting together in between times and talking to each other and sort of networking. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Honky Tonk was fun too.
That was so fun.
I forgot. Yeah,
getting Alex on the mechanical bill was worth the whole trip.
Well, that's right. We better mention that Alex was he had the longest time on the bowl, and then the person right after him beat his time. But what did you say? Is that there was this like group of people that like commiserated with each other after they had wrote?
Yeah, and there was one person that she kept doing the bill over and over again.
Oh.
But yeah, she was really good.
Yeah, I couldn't touch her times. But, I think 26 seconds is my time to be. I don't know.
Which was really good? Impressive.
It was impressive.
The average time was like 8. So you did great.
Very good.
But that is what ASCA is all about. You know, great educational sessions, a lot of fun in the event that has held every Friday of the conference. And next year we're going to be in beautiful Orlando at the Orlando Marriott World Resort Center there. And this will be a unique year next year. We're going to be doing a joint conference with SAMBA, which is the Society of Ambulatory Surgery Anesthesiologists Professionals. So it's a joint conference. So we've already started planning for it. Those of you that don't know, I'm on the education committee. And anybody that attended, please fill out your forms and make sure that you give us information about the conference and what you felt about it. And also we're asking for recommendations for future presentations during ASCA 2020, and you can do that on the website. So, you know, the worst complaint I think that we got this year was that, which I kind of think is not a bad complaint, is that people were a little bit upset that there were so many concurrent sessions that they wanted to be at both. Yeah. So if you're going to get a complaint, that's the type we should get. I think the other complaint in general about the venue is that it's easy to get lost there. I mean, I think I got lost about 20 times myself.
Every time I tried to go somewhere.
Yeah. Judy left early, but Alex and Sue and I left about the same time on Saturday, and we barely made it to the airplane on time because we couldn't find our way to the exit doors. Just kidding. We were really better than that. But we had a lot of fun just mm-hmm. walking around the place afterwards to see the full extent of the place. So put on your calendars for 2020 in the Marriott Orlando World Resort and Conference Center. Okay, let's take a short break and we'll come back and talk about upcoming events.
John, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies is really growing fast. We've been adding employees steadily over the past 12 months. Can you tell the listeners what's been happening?
So clearly this podcast has been very popular, mm-hmm. thanks, of course, to you and me, because mm-hmm. of our wonderful
of
work here and our infectious, I don't know if I should be using infectious personalities in a podcast here about infection control and various items, but definitely we're enjoying doing this, and certainly the word is getting out about the great things that we're doing at AHS. So recently we added infection prevention consulting to our services and mentoring of infection control preventionists in the organizations, and that's being headed up by Lori Rodericks, who is our newly certified CAIP individual. So she has mm-hmm. the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist certification now, and she's always been doing infection control for us, but now she's got this new title. So she can do ongoing infection control consulting, particularly if you don't have a qualified IC person on staff. She can help you in following up on infection control issues. She can do mentoring of infection control staff. And she can do infection control and sterile processing competencies. And we've also enhanced our life safety services by adding Jim Masters to our staff. He is a life safety surveyor, and so he joins Alex Borneman, who is our director of operations, to be able to do various life safety surveys and consulting on life safety issues, as well as probably the most important thing is follow up on life safety citations. That's mm-hmm. a very difficult area for many organizations to be able to deal with. You know, what happens when you get a life safety citation? How do you deal with that? So we now have that ability. And of course, our unique retainer-based regulatory services, where we help keep you on top of all the ASC regulatory requirements and always make sure that you are survey ready.
So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
Every episode will inform you of upcoming events, and if you'd like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
And we also want to remind you that the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is available to support your ASC association. John is available to speak, and the podcast can record a podcast from your meeting.
As we have done with two episodes mm-hmm. recently, the New Jersey episode, special episode, is already in the can, and we're working on the New York State Association podcast, which hopefully will get done within the week.
The Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology Incorporated, or APICS, 46th Annual Conference is June 12th through 14th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
The Tennessee ASC Association Membership Meeting is June 19th, 2019 at AmSurge in Nashville, Tennessee.
The Gulf States ASC Conference is June 19th through June 21st at the Ritz-Carlton, New Orleans.
The Arizona Ambulatory Surgery Association Annual Conference is June 27th and 28th at the Camelback Inn and Spa in Scottsdale, Arizona.
The 2019 Rocky Mountain ASC Conference and Trade Show is June 27th to June 28th at the Embassy Suites Hotel in downtown Denver, Colorado.
It's going to be a busy June, I can see. The Florida State Association ASC's Annual Conference and Trade Show is July 17th to July 19th, 2019 at the Lowe's Sapphire Falls Resort at Universal Orlando in Orlando, Florida.
The Georgia State ASC Association and the South Carolina State Association Joint Semi-Annual Meeting is August 15th and 16th at the DeSoto in Savannah, Georgia.
The California Ambulatory Surgery Association Annual Conference is September 4th through the 6th, 2019 in Monterey Bay, California. For more information, visit the casurgery.org website, and I will be presenting there or doing a panel discussion at the conference this mm-hmm. year.
The Tennessee ASC Association's Fall Conference and Trade Show is September 26th and 27th at the Hilton Memphis in Memphis, Tennessee.
The New York Metro ASC and Healthcare Management Symposium is November 1st, 2019 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The New York State Association of ASC's fall conference is in Tarrytown, New York, on November 7th, 2019. More details will follow.
And the Indiana Federation of Amatory Surgical Centers conference is October 18th in Carmel, Indiana.
Well, that's it for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again, and please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.